working directly with farmers or with other CCAs in general as well. And if I could invite my panelists to come up, we have David Royal from the Nature Conservancy and Jacob Ness is on staff with the Soil Health Partnership as well. And I'll ask them to, as we move into the panel, to introduce themselves. We'll go through a number of questions that I have for them to kind of get the conversation rolling. But then we'd love to hear from you as well. We'll save at least probably 10, 15 minutes on the back end for a little bit more discussion, a little bit more conversation. And so as you're hearing from both of them, and I'll be asking them questions, think about questions you might want to ask to Jacob and David and to better understand their work and ways that we can better learn together or new resources we might be able to develop from the Soil Health Partnership, from the TFI, from others in the space that could be helpful for you as CCAs to better understand how to make recommendations and to better inform how Soil Health and 4Rs are working together for an individual client. But let me hand it over, and maybe you can try yelling. If it's not loud enough, we can pass a mic around. So definitely in the back, definitely let us know if you can't hear, and I'll unwind this mic and we'll pass this back and forth. But if you could provide a little bit of background on yourself, who you are, what your organization's working on.
All right. I'm David Royal, and I'm with the Nature Conservancy. And 3 years ago, they created this position, and I go out and I work one-on-one with farmers on their 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program. And I feel that we've had great success here in Florida. I would like to back up. Our farmer that won the 4R Advocate Award was supposed to be here this morning. A little lady by the name of Irma visited us a month ago, and our farms are in a disaster. I don't know how many here are from Florida, but all of South Florida is pretty much totally wiped out for this crop season. Tomato plants and vegetable plants can't survive with 2.5 to 3 feet of water on top of them for over a week. And we got hit with a lot of wind. Probably a third of his farm, all the plastic had to be relayed. And when you relay after the plants have been planted, it's all got to be done by hand. So they're busy in the field trying to get everything back and going. So I'm sorry he couldn't be here, because he's got a great story to share. So I'll do the best that I can. But we've been working with the farmers, like I said, promoting the 4Rs, because water quality is such an important part. And I know Mr. Steve spoke earlier with y'all on the BMPs, and we have the 4Rs as part of the BMP plan here in Florida. And I think that's going to make a tremendous difference. We've seen a reduction. We like to use the word better nutrient management. We've got growers that are growing more than ever before, mainly because they're now putting it out at the right time and in the right place. And one thing different about Florida, as I sat here and listened to part of the speech before about cover crops, we have a hard time growing cover crops here in Florida because we're growing one crop behind the other crop. I'll give you an example. Strawberry season is about a 7-month period, and even before the season's over with, most farmers are either planting watermelons, cantaloupes, peppers, or squash, and they're planting them in the middles, so they're already taking off to grow before the strawberry season's over with, and then they come in and they yank the plants. And we grow, like I said, we grow multiple crops, but we do have a lot of our tomato growers are growing cover crops because they farm one part of their land for a spring crop and another part of their land for a fall crop. So, and we're working with as many as we can, and the other thing that we're trying to do is a mixture of cover crops, not just grow one single cover crop. So our ball game here in Florida is a little bit different than anybody else, and the technology that they've come up with, and we'll probably talk about it later, I'd like to share some of the unique technology that we're using, but it all boils down to protecting that soil, because one other thing you'll find here in Florida is most of our farms are multi-generation farms, and they're preparing it for their kids and their grandkids to continue to farm on it.
How's the volume in back? Can people hear everything that's going on? Okay, great. Just want to make sure that was all right. Jacob, could you provide your, a little bit background on yourself?
Yep. So my name is Jacob Nest. I am a CCA. I also have a 4-hour nutrient management and sustainability specialty as well. And I've been very involved after taking those exams with in the committees and working on continually developing those exams. It's been very interesting to work on those. A little bit of background on me. I'm a field manager for the Soil Health Partnership. I work with growers in western Iowa and Nebraska. I get into Minnesota and South Dakota a little bit, so I've got a pretty big territory. I get to work with a lot of grape farmers. And I've been with Soil Health Partnership for about 8 months now. Before that, I was in retail ag. So I did primarily precision ag. I did some sales, but most of my work was in the precision ag realm. I managed precision ag program, wrote all equations, but that really got me down the path of the sustainability in the 4 hours because of working with growers, doing what's right as far as nutrients. It was just kind of a natural progression for me. Beyond that, I've got a master's from South Dakota State University in soil science, and I've worked in the seed industry as well. So I've done a lot of different things. With working with farmers with the Soil Health Partnership, basically work on recruiting, and then work with them to set up and develop on-farm research. Just coordinate everything. We do field days, that type of stuff. So
I appreciate your background. Telling us a little bit more about who you are, the organizations you work with, what the intent is in working with farmers and other CCAs in your areas. And I wonder, so we've had some discussion here this morning about soil health concepts, about some 4-hour concepts. I wonder, thinking practically, from your perspectives, how you see some of these ideas working together. We've had some conversation here, but just as you're talking with farmers, other CCAs in your roles, if you could talk a little bit more about how you see these working together practically on the ground.
Well, I think the 4 hours and soil health really work hand in hand. Generally, when you meet with a grower that's interested in one, they're open to the idea of the other. When we work towards better soil health out in our fields, we change the environment, so we change the parameters that go into 4 hours. So you really need to be thinking about both as you're going.
I think they definitely play hand in hand with each other, especially here in Florida, because number one, our types of soils. Most of us have sandy soils, but the big thing is all the water is going to the coastlines. And the 4 hours have played a tremendous asset in improving the water quality leaving the farm. And that's so important, especially in our BMP program. That's what it is structured for, is improving the water quality. But again, with us having multiple generation farms here in crop after crop, soil health is such a tremendous important factor to the farmer, because if he doesn't have healthy soil, he's not going to grow a healthy crop. And he wants to do everything he possibly can to protect that soil and to continue to build it and to grow it to where it needs to be.
Oftentimes, as we're working with farmers or helping to educate other agronomists through our daily work, we're thinking about how do we measure, how do we track success, and this definitely plays in with soil health and 4-hour concepts as well. We don't know what's there if we're not setting baselines, tracking over time, assessing effects from any treatments we might impose in an individual field, new hybrids, different fertility programs, things like that. I wonder if you all might be able to talk a little bit about some of the tools that you've used to track success with other CCAs you're working with, or Jacob, in your case, with farmers as well. Just what are some of those tools that you've started using from both the soil health perspective and say the 4-hour perspective as well?
Well, I'd say just utilizing the soil health assessments is really important, but having something to compare to. That's one of the main issues that comes up out in the countryside for me. And I've done the soil health assessment, but I don't know what it means. But just working with the growers to understand, we need something to compare to, especially in the Midwestern soils. There's nothing to, it's not calibrated to those soils yet. So that's been big. And just beyond that, just using a general nutrient analysis and looking how that plays out over time, especially in the organic matter.
I think one of the things that's being a changing factor here is more and more farmers are going to a grid sampling, soil sampling basis. And I'm going to use an example of one. He farms around 3,000 acres, but he's got his total farm broke up into 50-acre tracts. And every other year, every acre will be soil sampled. And he feels after 5 to 6 years, then he'll kind of have a basis, and then he'll reduce doing every acre every other year. He'll break it down to 10-acre plots. But what has helped in that matter is with the new technology, now he is not only fertilizing by his soil samples, but he's also fertilizing by his soil types. And then if he finds an area that is weak, he's able to go in there and add additional organic matter to those areas. He has seen a huge reduction in fertilizer, and I don't think that it's the fertilizer that was needed to grow the crop. I think it was the fertilizer that wasn't being used is where the reduction has come in. So that's where I like to go back to better nutrient management. But I think that's telling a lot more of the story, and growers are doing a much better job of doing their soil samplings and pulling them the correct way. Instead, I mean, that's one thing I have found here with a lot of the smaller growers. They'll go to one end of their field and pull a soil sample, and then they'll go to the far end, and that's what they make their whole analysis on. Instead of pulling them correct and pulling them by their, and you know, one thing that we face here too is we've got, you may have 6 different soil types in one big field, or even more than that. So we've got such a variance in our soil types that you've got to be able to pull those samples and then see what you need, and then only add to the areas that you need to add it to.
And I would add to that, coming from the precision side, is you really need to understand what's going on in the precision equations, because there's hundreds of different equations out there for phosphorus and potassium, but are those equations matching with what the university recommendations are and the for our principles? So just keep an eye on that. I've seen a lot of applications where they're extremely excessive, and that does not follow with the 4R. So it's really important to understand what's going on in those recommendations.
After tracking with the soil sampling using some of the precision technologies that you're talking about, Jacob and David, how might you track throughout the rest of the growing season? So this might set you up in the fall to assess your nutrient content, any limiting factors in your soils. You might come in the spring, do some sampling at that point. What other metrics are you using or recommending to farmers to use that might help out?
Well, one thing that we're recommending, especially, and I don't know, how many Florida people do we have here? Okay. Because this usually blows people's mind when I tell them that strawberry growers are doing an 80 split application of nitrogen. And what a lot of, under Florida farming is, a lot of it's under plastic with drip tape, and basically what they're doing is they're spoon feeding. They'll pull their soil samples, and that makes their recommendation for their initial fertilizer application. But then they're out there on a regular basis pulling leaf tissue samples, and then they're constantly adjusting their fertilizer doses, because you know, you only need to be putting out there what that plant needs to continue to grow. And I think that's made a world of an impact, is through the leaf tissue sampling, being with the grower, being able to, I got a strawberry grower, and he's unique, but he actually went out there and buried coffee cans at different levels underneath his plants one year because he wanted to see how much fertilizer he was actually losing, and then he's readjusted his whole program. And I mean, it's phenomenal, and this isn't a small guy. This is an 800-acre grower, but it's amazing how he's been able to place those nutrients at the exact time and in the right place that they need to be where that plant's absorbing them the most.
Well, I'd say there's a lot of different models out there, especially on the nitrogen side. Those are excellent tools for monitoring how things are going through the season. My one caution there is they're a tool, but they're not a recommendation. So they're a great guide, but it doesn't replace actual sampling within the field. There are a few options out there for timed sampling throughout the season. If you've ever had an opportunity to do that, it's really interesting what you learn on how, say, nitrogen cycles through the season. And if you haven't, I recommend giving it a try sometime, just seeing how that nitrogen cycles with rain and dry conditions and that type of stuff, growth stage.
So we know there's some great tools available. We know new tools and services are coming available all the time. From your perspectives, what are the current limitations in your role working with farmers, working with other CCAs? Where could things progress to make it better?
I think all of us working together, because we're all kind of in the, all for the same cause, and I think the more that the farmer sees that the work together to protect the water quality is important. And I think also one thing that I've always said, one farmer telling another farmer is the best word of advertisement that you can have, because that's another individual doing a success story. I've got one farmer that we've been working with, and I call it my disaster farm. They've been doing everything wrong from the beginning, but we're slowly turning them around. And it was kind of funny that the owner was down not too long ago, and his question was, what do I need to do to win one of these awards that all my other neighbors are winning? And I think that the success stories is the biggest factor that we have to move forward, because then others are going to want to do it too.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. Collaboration, being on the same page, speaking the same lingo is very important. And but with the Soil Health Partnership, every year, each of our sites, we have field days where we get farmers in. And the best part of each of those events is when we get farmers to open up and start talking about what they've done, what they've seen. They start asking each other questions, and that truly gains a lot of ground in the area. Those type of meetings are easy to put together, really good.
So as a broader community, a CCA community, and we work with hundreds of thousands of farmers across the country, how can we do better? How can we do better to make these connections on the collaborative front, to share the information?
I think, and this is in our area, everybody may not know, but citrus has been in a battle for the last several years with greening, and nutrient management programs have played a major, major role in trying to bring the industry back. But one thing that we have found helpful, and just like Jake said, we have little grower roundtables. Now, the growers aren't going to tell all their secrets, but the growers have also realized we've got to share all the information that we possibly have to keep the industry alive here in Florida. And we've even started several areas with little roundtables of the row crop farmers. And I think it's a tremendous help of them sitting there talking about what they're doing, what worked, what hasn't worked. And, I mean, we can all learn from my granddaddy's philosophy when I grew up was, if you don't want to learn something today, don't get out of bed. And I think that that's what we need to take the approach of, is every day we need to try to learn something new or either try to help somebody learn something new.
Learning is key. Every time I meet with a farmer or have a field day, I tell them, you always got to try something new, do something, try something different, learn from it, and take what you learned and figure out what to do next year. And it's a continual process. But, you know, for collaboration as an industry, I'd say, coming from the retail side, sometimes that's a little bit tricky because you're in competition. But, you know, going to conferences and stuff, you know, networking is a great opportunity to kind of break those barriers down, learn from each other.
So we know this is going to be a business. There are business decisions being made every day in this regard. And I mentioned some of the ways we're pulling farmers together to help them share information amongst ourselves, where it might be appropriate, recognizing we can't share all of our business secrets. It is a competitive space, and we definitely recognize that. But we do see farmers have interest in this. Both of you had mentioned there is interest, or farmers are looking for the information, putting it together. And I wonder, you've talked a little bit about some of the practices they're using in the different areas. Jacob, you're in the Midwest, David down here in Florida. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about the practices that you're seeing the farmers discuss about what's working, what's not working. How are those ideas coming forth, and what are some of those other practices that we might not think of right away when we're talking about 4Rs and soil health?
In retail ag, and then also, where I'm at right now, the big target is always the middle adopters. They're the group that you're going to have the most success with. And not quite as risky as, say, the early adopters, but the early adopters are the folks out there that, you know, take on the challenge of trying something wild and crazy and new, and they learn a lot through that process. So if you can find those, and they might be a middle adopter in general, but they've tried one thing on their farm. So, you know, just working with the growers and figuring out what they've done, and then implementing and getting that information back to other farmers in the area is really, really critical, I think.
I think one thing that you always need to stress, new ideas and new ways of doing is great. But one thing you've got to realize, too, is you've got to adapt it to that farm, because every farm is different. The concept may be the same, but the way of getting there may have to be a little bit different. So I think one of the key things is working with the farmers, talking about the success story, but then let's see how we can adapt this to your farm and to your operation.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we have to make it pay off. Yeah. We have to make sure that the recommendations are not only making the farmer profitable over the long term, but in terms of our own businesses that we're managing, we have to ensure that there's long-term sustainability in that as well. Where are we at with the status of economics and understanding investment opportunities for improving 4Rs and soil health from your perspectives? Is there a ways we have to go on this one, or is this something we have a pretty good handle on?
I think the bottom line speaks for itself at the end of the day. I think with the technology that we now have, growers are seeing more profit in their pocket. One of the stories I'll share with you, I've got a grower that built a $175,000 fertilizer spreader, and a lot of people thought he was crazy. But when you look at what he reduced his fertilizer cost because of the better management of it, he paid for that the very first year that he used it. Now he's converting three more to the same type. And the bottom line is to try to put more money in the farmer's pocket at the end of the day. And I think through better nutrient management and healthy soils is going to do that. And because that's something that he can try to control. He can't control the market at the end of the day. All he can do is grow the best crop that he possibly can and hope for the best. But if he can reduce it on his production end, I think he's ahead of the ball game.
I guess I always look at it kind of from the sustainability standpoint. And I use the three P's. Some people use society, environment, and economics, but I use the three P's because it's easy for our farmers to understand. People, planet, profit. People are your neighbors. Planet's environment, and profit's the economic side of it, of course. Basically, it's like a three-legged stool. Stool's not going to stand up if it's only got two of those legs. So we've got to look at all three of the aspects. And to get back to the question, as far as the 4 R's are concerned, they're a lot easier to implement. It's just tweaking. It's better management in season. Generally, you'll see either a savings on nutrients or increased yield and decreased environment impacts. So I think that's a lot easier to kind of see the return and easier to implement in managing the business. Soil health can be a little trickier, adding cover crops or going no-till. It's something completely different and foreign to a lot of farmers. And you don't necessarily see the yield impacts right away. But what you start seeing is the fringe benefits. And we're kind of stuck in this model where we want to do something in the spring, and it's got to make an impact in the grain bin at the end of the year. Otherwise, the farmer doesn't want to do it. It gets to be a challenge. So soil health is a little bit more challenging. But I always tell people, give it a try. Start small, because you'll make mistakes. Won't work perfect the first year, but you'll learn through the process, and you'll see those benefits come up. So soil health is a little bit more of a challenge, but it's a fun challenge because the impacts are so great on the farm.
So maybe let's go back to the measurements, because we know if we're tracking things effectively, hopefully we'll be able to measure change over time, whether it's our soil parameters, whether it's the environmental response, the economic response, our yield responses, things that are really important to our farmers and we know of. We did some sampling earlier this year down in Florida. David helped help coordinate some of this. And David, I don't want to put you completely on the spot and going through the next couple slides, but I wonder if you and Jacob, you're pretty familiar with these assessments as well. If you might walk through. So this on the screen is an example of a Cornell soil health assessment, and across the Soil Health Partnership, we do this on every single farm every other year. So we have a wealth of knowledge there, and we're trying to understand how to use these as business management tools for our farmers. So we did it down here to pull in a representative sample from a farmer that David works with, and I wonder if we could walk through this a little bit and how to interpret this. This is the first one that was pulled. David, I wonder if you could provide a little bit more background on the cropping system, and then Jacob, if you could go into how you work with your farmers in interpretation.
Okay, number one, I'm not a fertilizer rep, so I was a man that went and pulled all these samples, and it wasn't a good day. It had rained the day before, and when you're in the middle of an orange grove, there is no breeze. And it was 97 degrees that day. So, but basically, this was pulled out of a citrus grove. And it's out of a grove that I think the people really do a good job with their nutrient management, and they are big on adding organic matter back to the grove. But I think one of the things in a citrus grove, and through the years, people have come to the conclusion, we used to pull soil samples just all over. Now we're focusing on pulling them all down the drip line, and the drip line is right there at the edge of the tree. You pull a few on the inside, but most of them are down the drip line. And getting growers to pull them by blocks. I know on this one, and I'm just trying to look at the screen, the pH is a little higher than what we normally want. But one thing you got to remember is, I did say it rained the day before, but that was probably the first little shower we'd had in months, and the growers were pumping a lot of water, trying to keep their crops set. And we have a severe pH problem with our water in Florida right now. And so I think that that had a huge impact on the pH, and we all understand that if the pH isn't right, you're not getting the best use of your nutrients. But I'm going to let somebody else go through all the technical part of it, because that is not my forte.
You got a question right out here?
Yeah. Where was this? What part of the state?
It was there in Hardy County on the eastern part, Flatwoods.
And we'll follow this one up with some summaries of the routine soil health or routine fertility testing we did on the same farm as well. That'll be the next one. So these are results came right from the lab. So we didn't edit any of this. So. I was looking at that a little earlier as well.
I guarantee you there's no clay on that place. It is Flatwoods with some sand. It is the type of soil that's there.
Actually, this is
So Jacob, I wonder if you could walk through how do you start to interpret these results coming out? Granted, you're not from Florida, you don't know the cropping systems down here, but in general, at the higher level, how do we start to look at these assessments?
Well, and this might be a little different than some of the soils, but you know, in Nebraska, we've got maybe some soils that might read similar to this, and probably the first impression of a grower is going to have is, there's a lot of red on that. We've got a lot of low numbers on the ratings, and they're kind of going to have that pit in the bottom of their stomach. But generally, at this point in the game, usually I tell guys, don't pay too much attention to the ratings on there today, because they're not calibrated to the soils in the Midwest. And because of that, you know, we've got, let's see, a 0.7 on organic matter. I've been in fields that have organic matter less than that have gotten, you know, the won the corn yield contest for the state. So does it mean that it's a unhealthy soil? Not necessarily. So I try to start out with that. And as I mentioned earlier, we need to have something to compare to. So we need to compare two treatments or try to find something that's the same soil but in a natural state. So if you have a grass fence row or waterway that hasn't been disturbed, that's a good way to compare. But basically, I go through through this and just kind of highlight some of the things, but I want to have something compared to. So this in and of itself doesn't mean much, because we want to see those values increase with the treatment.
What are some of these measurements? We can read on the screen where we make recommendations every day. I wonder if you could walk through a couple of these to provide which ones you might highlight that might change quickly, that we might be tracking year over year. Again, we're going to use this as a starting indicator for, as you mentioned, we're going to do some comparisons. Mm-hmm. Are we improving? Are we decreasing some of these? Are we remaining the same over time? How are we going to use these soil test results, similar to a routine fertility analysis that we can jump to on the next slide? But what are some of the ones that we might be tracking over time that might change relatively quickly?
And I say one thing real quick?
Sure, sure.
I know the talk before was about phosphorus, and I see on this that the phosphorus is very, very high, but you've got to understand, we use very little phosphorus in our fertilizer here. That is natural phosphorus that is in the ground. And this grove is in what they call the Bone Valley. And that's it. Our county is being dug up. That's where your phosphorus is coming from, most likely, is our county right now. So the phosphorus in the ground is natural. It is not from over-fertilizing with phosphorus. Because I know that number jumps out big right there on that chart.
Well, I'd say where we're seeing probably more movement on there is aggregate stability earlier on. Look at that. But available water quality actually has a big impact on the farm, just in, you know, catching those heavy rains, retaining enough water, and then the aggregate stability and the water holding capacity make a big difference on workability and being able to get out in the field earlier on. So farmers are going to be more interested in those numbers, although they might not understand them. Organic matter, obviously that's a pretty simple one. We want to see that number go up. Soil respiration, another one that comes up a lot, and that, if you take these and you compare two things like a CRP, grass strip, and a field you just tilled, your soil respiration is obviously going to be a lot higher in that field, which is potentially going to affect your numbers. So I've had some interesting conversations with growers at field days because they said, well, I've got really good respiration. That must mean my tilled fields is really healthy. Well, not necessarily. It just means that he's added oxygen and started to decompose his organic matter and go from there. Just agronomically, I mean, you get into the nutrients. I like to look at the soil pH more on the stratified sampling that we do.
So we can go into that in the next slide. And I think across all these, before we do that, it's the understanding that this is all regionally contextualized. Even within an individual field, oftentimes we have multiple soil types, and those inherent factors that formed those different soil types are going to greatly affect our numbers coming back. So a 0.7% organic matter in a sandy soil, if it's a Sparta sand, that's going to look awesome. That's going to look really great. But if it's, say, a Plano silt loam or something like that, you're not doing so well in that situation. So I think it's setting our expectations based on where you're at and the systems that you're in, which is a big part of it as well. And again, as Jacob mentioned, we're not going to beat anybody up over these red numbers coming back, not now at least. So let's see how we track over time and with those comparisons. So jumping to the soil fertility test, this was these samples, David, you pulled these samples from the same grove, and what we did here was we collected stratified samples. So we looked at 0 to 2 inch cores and 2 to 6 inch cores, and this is by no means all the results coming back from the routine analysis, but some of the ones we just wanted to highlight for this discussion, and especially as we open it up for questions as well. So Jacob, I cut you off earlier. If you want to jump back into the
Within the Soil Health Partnership, we do stratified sampling, so 0 to 2 and 2 to 6 inch, which isn't very common with advisors out there, but it's really interesting when you start working with farmers. I had a guy who was all excited because I really increased my organic matter. I'm seeing really high numbers while he's looking at the 0 to 2, and so you almost got to convert these to be able to compare back to some old sampling. So if you do stratify, make sure you're doing that, you're combining those numbers. But we're seeing a lot of stratification, and even in the tilled fields, not just the no-till. So it's really interesting to see that and see how that cycles over time. As we increase the soil health, we start seeing a little bit more of the natural cycling with the earthworms and plant roots going down deep in the soil. But being able to track these really tells a lot. Like if you have a no-till field, track how those numbers compare over time. So that's basically how I'd use that with the grower. We don't have organic matter on here, but I mentioned that earlier. Stratified sampling is very useful on the farm. Nitrogen as well.
So maybe let's turn the tables a little bit. I have a few more questions for these guys, but happy to hear your questions for these folks or even around the room for getting the discussion going a little bit more. And any questions for these guys and what they've the areas they've worked in, how they're looking at the tools that they've mentioned, whether it's precision ag, whether it's taking the soil health assessments, integrating those with the routine analysis samples. And any questions for these guys right now before we move on? So respiration test, I'd have to look back at the manual here, but I believe it's they dry down the samples and they re-wet them and look over a period of time.
Is it a culture situation or they just let it do whatever
it is? I don't have the manual with me to look at the methods there. I can pull that up after the fact for this. Yeah, it is CO2, yeah. They're looking at that way. A dried sample, then a re-wetting event, and looking over a period of time that way.
And if you're not aware of this already, the Cornell soil health assessment, all the information for all the tests are available online. Basically, just Google the test, and I think you should be able to find it, all the methods and descriptions.
Just another general question. Are there other soil health assessments?
Yeah, there are a fair amount of testing that's being determined. And I would refer people back to the Soil Health Institute, looking at the indicators that were mentioned earlier, the Tier 1 indicators as a starting point. Those have been well vetted across the scientific community. If there are tests that you want to add on to your fertility assessments, that would be a great place to look. Those have been quite a lot of time and effort has been put into developing that list of indicators. So the Soil Health Institute's action plan is on their website. You can definitely find the information there as well. It's pretty easy to find and look up. But definitely, if you have any questions on that, reach out to us afterwards as well. Steve?
Yeah, the list of 19 is also on there. You know, I'm like Tom. I tried to group them and so forth. I can't group 19 indicators together and memorize them. It's been after a long day. But if you go to the website, there's a place on there, you can see them all
listed
out.
Tom?
Interested in Dave's comment on ignore the ratings and use the values for comparison. I'm wondering among the growers that you interact with on this, how many of them are tracking these measurements over time, for how long a time period, and what challenges do they encounter when they're trying to monitor trends?
Well, I'll have to say that the large share of the growers that I work with are new to the partnership, so they've only done one sampling of the soil health assessment, so we don't have anything to compare to, because our sampling initially is baseline, so no treatments have been established. So unfortunately, I haven't had a lot of experience working with growers myself over time.
I can say from the broader context, so Jacob is relatively new to the program. The partnership has been around for about 4 years. We do have several comparisons, farmers that enrolled early, where we can look year over year, and those farmers that have been in the program with the treatments we've seen, and this is, again, the Midwest, so different cropping systems than we would expect down here in Florida, even through the Southeast. But we are starting to see some changes in some of the parameters that were mentioned earlier, like aggregate stability, the water holding capacity, things that way. But the system that we've set up across the partnership is to test every other year for at least 5 years and hopefully extend that out to 10 years with each individual farm. Ben?
From from a logistics standpoint, how could a CCA incorporate the soil health testing in with, you know, the regular nutrient samplings that they might be performing already?
From my perspective, I would say you need something to compare it to. So either another treatment, baseline piece of ground, so like your grass waterway or strip, as I mentioned before, or look at it over time as you're implementing new practices on the farm. That's my main recommendation. As far as grid sampling, it's really cost prohibitive to do this on a grid. So you probably want to do one sample per field, or like a zone type sampling of a field, and make sure that if you're doing it year after year, that you go back to the exact same spot. Very, very important to do that.
There might be learning opportunities for a CCA to work directly with a farmer and track these changes over time to see what the changes associated with, say, a treatment difference out in the field, whatever that might be. We know we set up a lot of strip trials in many capacities, whether it's at least in row crop agriculture, and with those treatments we can track, see if there are any differences that way. And we do know that it's not just one organization or another doing this. There are a lot of people, a lot of organizations taking a lot of samples, and something we're working on is to try to compile that information in a better way. Steve?
Yeah, the term that's gotten mentioned here a couple times, I think, is really useful, is this idea of time. This will sound a little trite, forgive me, but I think it's true. When you talk to the soil test and fertility test, I think we're looking at a destination. You know if we're giving crop and your soil, what levels of these different nutrients you want. So you're looking at a destination. In the case of a lot of these soil health indicators, I can't tell you, this is good, you've arrived. You now have a healthy soil, congratulations. On the other hand, if you know what direction you want to be moving in. So I think the trend is what's really important. So it's sort of the journey as opposed to the destination. And as silly as that might sound in this context, that really, I think that analogy works. So. One of the things I'm going to ask Nick is, in these farms where they have done, sort of in several years, gotten a sequence of these, how many years does it take before you start to see things shift in the direction that you want to see them shift? Do you see it as early as the 2 years, or does it take longer?
So again, this is the Midwest, and it's not probably going to be helpful much to the folks in Florida. But in the Midwest, what we're seeing is with vigorously growing cover crop treatments, no-till treatments, it's often as little as that second round of soil health assessment sampling. So we set the baseline, come back, there's the second year, have a treatment established, the third year we would collect another soil health assessment in the spring, and it's usually that third year we can start to see at least some trends.
Yeah.
So typically we pair this with a routine analysis that would have that. So you couple them together. Oftentimes we're finding a routine analysis, this isn't everything on that analysis, but it doesn't have some of those other physical and biological indicators. So it's trying to come up with that suite and relying on those around you that have done other similar samplings and learning together. And maybe that's a good question for our panelists as well, to think about where do you learn more about this? What are some of the sources we could go to figure out who else is doing the sampling? How can we learn in terms of ranges of values we might expect for different soil types, different cropping systems, different regions of the country? Do you guys have any thoughts on where you might start out that way?
I think the best way is if you can get the farmers to track it from year to year to year and then build that, because like I said, here we've got such a soil variation in the fields, and you're going to have to keep going back to the same spot. I know when I pulled these, they sent me the longitude and latitude, and I was out there clicking down the row to pull them. So if we ever do it again, we know exactly where to go back to do it, and that's going to be the only way, is to build that base and then go from there.
I would say at this point in the game, trying to go out and find what someone else has done somewhere else, and try to learn from that and apply it locally is not going to be very beneficial. The best thing, as you said, local data is going to be the best thing here, because there's not enough data out there. These assessments are relatively new. Best thing for anyone to do is probably find a farmer and try some of these assessments so you learn as you go through. That's going to be very beneficial for you, because this soil health topic is not going to go away. So being on the forefront is a lot better than being on the back side of it. As far as learning the assessment, I would probably point you towards the resources available with the labs. Look at what they've written, knowing that those are not going to apply directly to right where you're at. So.
Additional questions, comments?
So is there an effort to, like, there's lots to, for the parameters, lots of methodologies probably to do one of the parameters. Is there an effort to standardize methodologies across the country by state, or do we go to some sort of regionalization like we see for phosphorus? Is that
Diane?
NRCS is attempting to set a standard group of methods. Obviously, NRCS cannot mandate those.
Sorry, Dan, could you speak up a little bit?
Okay. NRCS
Thank you.
Is developing a set of standards. We cannot mandate their use outside of NRCS, but we are going to be making them available.
A time frame on that?
Well, there's a white paper that has been accepted within NRCS that is now working, worming its way up through the rest of the USDA. And then on the private end, I and two ARS colleagues are developing a book with a standard set of soil health assessment methods that hopefully will be done in the next year and a half, 2 years. So we're working on it. It's a work in progress.
All right. I think we're just about out of time, so I really appreciate all the questions and you guys coming up to help share some experiences.
Thank you.